This episode of the Startup Slingshot is brought to you by Sunag Consulting. Sunag Consulting offers services to help your business compete and succeed in today's marketplace, including website design and online marketing. You can check them out at sunagconsulting.com or contact them by phone at 615-669-3269. For all the loyal TSS viewers out there, Sunag Consulting has put together a PDF of 20 things you can do today to improve your Facebook fan page. To snag a copy, click the Sunag logo to the right of the video. Now onto the show. My name is William Griggs, founder of the Startup Slingshot, a resource that delivers guidance from experienced entrepreneurs and business experts on how to dream, launch, and grow your business. Have you ever wondered how a person can take a business from an idea to Forbes' list of America's most promising companies? Today's guest is Stephen Howe. Stephen is the CEO and co-founder of Shareable Inc., an enterprise cloud computing company that helps healthcare organizations of all sizes transition to a more electronic healthcare environment. Today, I'm going to talk with Stephen about what he did to get Shareable Inc. off the ground, including how he finds his early customers and how he hired his early employees. Enjoy. All right, Steve, thanks for joining us today.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks a lot, William.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. I've got a background in technology and entrepreneurship. I've started three companies. All three have been technology companies. Two have been focused in healthcare IT.
Nice. So what's your most recent company?
Right. The current company is called Shareable Inc., and it is an enterprise cloud computing company. What we do is essentially we help hospitals and physicians become more electronic. And we do that through some technology that allows us to convert natural inputs like handwriting or gestures on iPads. And we take that natural human input and we create structured data that can be used in electronic medical records, billing systems, and other electronic systems.
Gotcha. And just kind of to our viewers out there, this series is all about kind of demystifying the process. So we're going to go through Shareable Inc., talk about what it is right now, and then we're going to go back to the beginning and kind of learn how Steve came up with the idea and what he did after that to land his first client. So Steve, can you tell us a little bit about where you all are? Have you raised money? Do you have employees?
Yeah, we're still an early stage company, but we're in the commercialization phase of the business and the growth phase. We have raised to date about $6 million of venture capital. And we have an employee base of about 30 employees and growing. We're hiring, we're bringing on more talent on board. And we've got a very impressive set of customers that keep us busy and also provide us with a lot of new ideas in terms of new products and services.
Nice. Are there any customers that you have that are maybe household names or people our viewers might have heard of?
We've got some pretty big customers, and generally we get the permission before we announce who they are. One particular customer that recently issued a press release with us is a group called Sheridan Healthcare. They represent 1,200 anesthesiologists. They are the largest anesthesiology group in the United States. They're sometimes nicknamed a mega group because they're so big.
Nice. So you got some big clients. You got 30 employees working for you. You've raised $6 million. You're getting ready to kind of launch the rocket ship, commercialization, and growth. How did you even come up with the idea? Let's take a step back and really even think about where did the idea come from?
Right. That's a great question. I'm a big believer that a lot of companies get started by simple observations than a grand vision. This company, I started with a physician friend of mine who obviously as part of his day was working with patients and having to deal with information and knew that there were challenges of trying to get information into electronic systems. Also, my background, I spent over 15 years trying to build, market, and sell computer systems for doctors. So I had a lot of experience in terms of understanding where the challenges are in the industry. And I think the reality of our industry is that everyone wants innovation, but no one wants change. So what you find is there are a lot of vendors who build these wonderful computer systems, and kind of the idea of having the doc input something into the system was kind of an afterthought. So you build all these systems that are well engineered, but the input part is not well thought through. So we took a different approach where we studied what physicians were actually doing today in terms of documentation and allowed essentially work from physician to the database, making essentially building a system that is just so well adopted now by physicians. They really love the product.
Gotcha. So correct me if I'm wrong. You basically have a background in this. So this is kind of a warm business for you. You're coming into it with some knowledge. Looks like, like you talked about, a simple observation. You notice that this is a problem, and a lot of people have identified this as a problem in terms of having electronic healthcare records and the actually getting the records documented from the doctors into a form that can be shared or viewed by multiple doctors or whoever needs to access the content over time. But you also realize that all the solutions out there weren't being adopted, and the reason they weren't being adopted was actually because of the input issue. So you went back to the beginning, you observed it, and you created a different approach that actually fit into the life or the actual actions of an actual doctor.
That's right. We took both a tops-down view of the market and a bottoms-up view. So from a tops-down view, we looked at the analyst reports and just high-level market analysis about, you know what, I think fewer than 6% of hospitals actually document with computer keyboards. So we started with high-level data, and then also we worked from the bottom up. We actually went and followed physicians, interviewed physicians, and what they would say is, you know what, I really like documenting on paper. One great example is emergency rooms. 80% of emergency rooms in this country document on paper. And you talk to an ER doc, and what the ER doc tells you is that, you know, patient comes in with a gunshot wound, there's no time to go boot up a computer system. Mm-hmm. You got to grab a piece of paper and just, you know, and scribble, take notes, make marks. It's the only thing that can keep up with them. And so the top-down view and the bottoms-up view really, really resonated for us, and we thought this would be a great approach to servicing that need in the marketplace.
Gotcha. It seems like with a couple other interviews in the series, you see this trend where it's a personal pain or a personal background in something and personal observation that led to a starting of a business to a solution to a problem and a different approach. And so we've talked a little bit about how you came up with the idea. We talked a little bit about where you are currently. What about going back to the beginning? You had the idea. What was kind of your next step?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I think one of the first steps was going to potential customers. And for me, I often say this, you know, the difference between a business and a club is whether or not you've got happy paying customers. I think one of the benefits of being an entrepreneur is that you can go to customers, it's very disarming. You say, hey, look, I have an idea. Can I just run it by you? We're thinking this would be a good approach. And then you get generalist and very honest feedback. And I think it's important in that situation to make sure there isn't sugarcoating, because the last thing you want is some customer to tell you what you want to hear and not the truth. So if you can have that candid conversation with customers and therefore the market, that's extremely helpful. And then, of course, the next step is to make sure you get a customer that's willing to write you a check. And to me, that is validating. That is, you know they're not sugarcoating. You know this is something they want. And the power of the pen, the power of the check validates that.
Gotcha. So you have the idea and you talked about approaching customers. How do you actually do that for our viewers out there? What do you do? Do you find them online? Do you email them? What's your advice?
Yeah, I think it depends on the market and the product or service. For us, in healthcare, especially healthcare IT, it's a conservative marketplace. Typically, people aren't going to go Google you, find you in a search engine, and then send you credit card information to buy the product. There has to be a deeper kind of discussion and evaluation. As we got started, we went to trade shows, and that was a relatively inexpensive way to present yourself, to get leads and prospects, but also to attend some of the educational sessions, sit side by side with the thought leaders, and again, in a very disarming but candid way, share the vision of the company and see if it works, see if it resonates, see if there's some rough edges that need to be considered.
Gotcha, makes a lot of sense. So in your case, you went to trade shows,
you took some of the courses or sat in on some of the classes or speeches that they were having. You got some access to not just leads and prospects, but some of the thought leaders, you say. If you were to approach one of the thought leaders or one of the clients, what would be kind of your approach? How would you actually set up a booth at the trade show, or would you just be walking around?
Well, you know, actually both. So our approach and, you know, what worked for us was to actually have a booth, in which case you get a lot of the kind of unqualified leads, people who are just walking down the aisleway and say, hey, that's kind of interesting, I'm going to take a look. But not only that, if you're there talking with thought leaders, having kind of a candid, and if you can, kind of the executive level conversation where you're having, you know, high level discussions, trying to understand their pain points, their strategy, and so forth, and show them that you understand what you're saying, you're listening, and you're trying to think of how you can support them and what they're trying to accomplish. And if there's interest, you can bring them back to the booth and say, hey, if you don't mind, come back to, if you come to the exhibit floor, come to the booth, I can give you a demonstration of our approach. And I think what's important is that there be continuity in the discussion. And especially for an early stage company, you really have to listen to the customer, and you really have to show them that you listened and you understood what they were trying to tell you.
Gotcha. Makes a lot of sense. Get a little feedback, but there it goes. Okay, so we talked about getting from idea to kind of in front of the customers and evaluating and maybe incorporating some of their feedback. What about landing that first sale? That seems like for most entrepreneurs out there, how do I do that? You know, you read sales books and you see other entrepreneurs talk about how they hit their, you know, $1 billionth dollar of revenue. And you're like, well, I just want to sell my first product. What was kind of your approach for selling your first customer?
Yeah, well, that's a great point. The first customer is a tough one, especially for large and sometimes complicated sales processes. And one challenge that a new company faces is that you don't yet have reference sites, right? So if you're a customer about to buy something, maybe buy something innovative, an obvious and logical question is, hey, can I talk to a reference? And so my advice to entrepreneurs is that in that situation, you know, being candid is the most important thing. You know, tell them right up front that you're looking for your first customer, because you know what, you know, they're going to find out they're the first anyway. And so our approach was to be very candid, which is to say, hey, look, we've got a great concept. We've got some great technology. We've got a great team here. We're just starting to commercialize this. And we'd like you to be our first customer. And generally, the trade-off there is you generally have to start with a pilot. So you say, hey, look, the burden's on me to prove it to you, and I will take that challenge. So let's agree to sometimes it's a free pilot, which I don't advise because, you know, frankly, if it's free, then the customer doesn't really have skin in the game. And again, you yourself are trying to vet if the idea is real. And it's not truly vetted unless someone writes a check, and because that means there is value. So typically, you know, how we had ranged and how what I recommend most entrepreneurs to do is we said, hey, look, we want a real commercial contract with you. We want you to be a real customer. But we'll give you a 60-day out clause. If I don't deliver what I commit to, what I've, you know, essentially promising you in the sales process, then no harm, no foul, you know, we allow you out of this contract. And in that sense, I think it's configured well in the sense that it's a real customer. They've gone through the full contract review as they would if they were to buy any other product, but you manage their risk. So if it's a bad match or you're not able to deliver, no harm, no foul, they're able to walk away from that account. So our first customer, we kind of approached in that format, and what I think was amazing for us is our first customer was a really big customer. In fact, it was a million. Our first customer was a $1 million contract, which, you know, was exciting and also I think a little nerve wracking. But the great news is, you know, as they say, you know, how do you eat an elephant? You know, one bite at a time. Which is, you know, we took one step at a time and just were very thoughtful in terms of how we delivered our product and our service to the customer. And the great news is I think we'd offer them a 60-day out. 30 days in, they said, we don't need that clause anymore. Let's do this. Let's roll out. Let's expand. Let's go as fast as we can. And at that point, we said, you guys, it's not a club anymore. This is a real company.
Nice, nice. So to kind of go back to what you stated, you say getting the first customer is always tricky. It depends on the sales process. You know, if you're in one of these intensive processes like you all are, that require references, or that even just references help, you got to be candid when you're trying to land that first customer and not trying to shy over the fact or just avoid the fact that you don't have any other previous customers. But land your first customer through a pilot approach so you can actually prove it and knock their socks off, but do so in a manner that maybe you might give them a discount, or maybe you might give them an out clause, but it requires that they exchange some money for your effort so you know it's real, like you're saying, you're vetting the business.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Yeah.
What about finding customers? You know, we talked a little bit about the use of trade shows, but what else do you all do early on and now to actually find customers?
Yeah, well, that speaks to strategic marketing, and that is, in my opinion, very important, especially in a era where there's a scarcity of venture capital. So, you know, everyone has to be very smart about how do they shepherd their resources. A lot of startup companies, what they do is they throw a lot of things at the wall and they see what sticks, and what sticks they say, hey, we'll go after that. And sometimes that's the best you can do, but it's a real expensive, slow and lossy approach. What worked well in our favor is that we applied some strategic marketing up front. We said, you know, of the entire healthcare market, which is substantial, it's 1/6 of the U.S. economy and growing. It's a big, big marketplace. We said, we're going to go after three little, or, you know, three segments. Each of them actually are pretty big, but as a proportion of the entire healthcare market, we said, we're going to be focused and go after three segments. And we said, hey, let's go after anesthesia, because we know that 93% of that market, they document on paper, they need to go electronic. Let's go after emergency rooms. The reason that I described, historically, it's been difficult to build software that can keep up with the ER doc. And let's also go after small physician practices, little doctor's offices, because most of the care in this country actually happens in small doctor's offices of 1 to 3 physicians, where the receptionist is also the local IT expert. And they're not likely to buy complicated computer systems. And we said, you know what? If I look at the whole market, those are probably three places that would be pretty good to get started. And that allowed us to shepherd our resources, to focus. And when you have a small team, focus is important. And you don't have a whole lot of time to run down cul-de-sacs that, you know, obviously are dead ends that don't become anything. And the great news is, you know, within 6 months, not only were we successful in those three segments, but we won the market share leaders of each of those segments. So not only did we see success, not only did we vet the concept to ourselves, but we were to plant the big flag in each of those segments and say, you know what, we know these are the right markets. And from there, then we began to expand to adjacent markets.
Gotcha. It made a lot of sense. To recap what you said, you approached it in a strategic fashion where you basically took the big pie that is healthcare in America and then broke it down into different pieces or smaller segments. So then you could actually know, like you said, how to focus your resources. Because I thought there's one interesting thing that you said there, which was the fact that if you just go after everything, or if you go down a bunch of dead ends and have to come all the way back, you're burning through resources that are finite, or you have to go out and get more resources. So actually focusing early and often focuses your efforts and the money that you have behind those efforts to actually get more bang for the buck and do more with what you have. That's a really interesting point.
That's right. I mean, it is about strategic marketing is all about yield, about getting the most return for your investment. And that's very important because in a company that's backed by investors, they want to see a financial return. So not only is it important to shepherd your resources and keep your focus, but you want to be able to demonstrate that leverage and that return on investment, because that's what inspires you know, future investment, by having that track record.
Gotcha. So we have the idea. We talked about where you are currently. Then we went back. We talked about the idea. We talked about how you can test it using trade shows and actually determine whether or not it's a real business. And then we started talking about strategic marketing and who we're going to market to. And can we talk a little bit about how you're actually going to reach these people for your specific instance or case?
Right. So that speaks to more kind of the traditional marketing of lead generation and creating visibility and thought leadership. That's also an interesting question because, clearly you could spend an infinite amount of money on marketing. And it's, again, an issue of where do you spend those dollars and those resources. And, again, that's different, I think, for the particular marketplace that you're in. For us, one of the exciting things about healthcare is that even it's so expansive, there are 4,000 hospitals in this country, and you know who those 4,000 hospitals are. So the good news is we know who our customers are. And by knowing that, you can kind of decide the best way to get your message out. And some people utilize trade shows, others utilize advertising. Even now, social networks are popular. What we found is that it's funny. It's such a big industry, but it's also very small in terms of how people communicate to one another. So we've tried to not be too glitzy with our marketing, but instead make customers successful. And with that, kind of success breeds more success. So we've really kind of encouraged this kind of word of mouth.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So you're working hard to make your customers successful, and then they'll be that reference that you need when you're trying to land someone, another customer, versus them going with, let's say, your competition.
That's right.
What about, we talked about earlier in the introduction that you're the co-founder. So it started with you and a co-founder. What about when you went back to the very beginning and actually hired your first employee? What was that process like?
Yeah, well, it's important. Early employees make a huge difference in terms of the future of the company. I'm a big believer that the first 20 or 30 employees really set the culture of the company, of what's acceptable, what's unacceptable, what are qualities that we respect and try to groom and foster. So picking those early employees are important. And also back to the theme is you don't have a whole lot of time. So a poor hire is going to be a quagmire for you, and you really have to avoid that. So we leveraged a few things. Two things come to mind. One is I've got a team that's done this before. I mean, I've built a couple other companies before, so I had a talent pool that I could go back to. And that's important for a few reasons. First, you're bringing in quality people. But secondly, you already know each other and you have a way to work with one another. And generally there's trust. So you trust each other to get the job done. And everyone's strengths and weaknesses. And the reality is everyone has strengths and everyone has weaknesses. That's just how it is. And when you have a team that trusts each other, that communicate, you help make a stronger team. You compensate for each other's myopia or weaknesses or what have you. So I was able to bring some people that I worked with before, and that was great. Then a little further out, you enter a slightly different dynamic, which is you want to bring in new people who bring in fresh ideas, because if you don't, then you're kind of, you don't challenge each other in a positive way. So what really worked out well for me was an initial core team that kind of set a basic infrastructure team, and then bringing in some new folks who brought in some new perspectives, but kind of in the construct of a team that's worked well and worked well together before.
Gotcha. So when you had this, you said you had this kind of network or talent pool to pull from. What did you actually do? How did you approach that?
Yeah, well, interesting things. I went back to them and said, we're putting the band back together. what do you say? And generally, I found a lot of people very excited about the prospect of pursuing something new. And some of these folks that joined joined up early before we had venture capital, when we had just enough money to survive a few months at a time. But these are talented folks, and like I said, it was a team that really trusts each other and said, you know what, anyone can figure this one out, we're going to figure it out. And I'll tell you, you know, like I said, I've been through this a couple times already, but the early days are some of the most fun that you're going to have, especially, you know, when you have those nice team wins, and it's really, really, really rewarding.
Yeah, that's cool. That's some good actionable advice. Keep up with your network and keep in touch with them so you can, you know, if you're thinking about starting a business in the future, but also, you know, document people that you might like to work with in the future and keep in touch with them specifically.
Yeah, that's right. And I would advise also, you know, the off-list reference checks are very important. So tapping into the network, making sure that the candidate interviews well, has a great resume. You kind of have to do the check the references that aren't on the list of references that are provided to you, just to make sure there are no surprises. Again, a wrong hire can be very, very expensive in terms of time and money, and missed opportunity for a young company.
Yeah, that's good advice. Another thing we want to do in this series is give our viewers a realistic expectation for our viewers when they're out there starting a business. We often joke that, you know, if you watch CNBC, if they're not showing financial shows, they're showing, you know, stories of people that have made it, and they're showing how so, you know, easy and how so successful. And so when our viewers are out there actually starting their business and they hit a wall, they start thinking, I'm the only one. What am I doing wrong? So what we want to do is set an expectation or a point of reference that shows all these entrepreneurs are hitting walls, but they're all plowing through them, hopping over them, digging under them, or going around them. So can you kind of give us an example of the hardest thing that you've faced either in this venture or previous ventures?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. And, you know, I'll just say out front that, you know, it's never easy. I mean, it's always a challenge, and that's part of being the entrepreneur, is that it's about, you know, going from challenge to challenge with great enthusiasm, and every day it's solving a puzzle, and that's just how it is, from winning customers to designing the product to redesigning the product to raising money to finding and bringing new talent on board. They're all challenges. I think, you know, one of the biggest challenges for me is always the kind of internal. You know, what you find is that, you know, you can have people, you can bring someone on board who is very talented, but perhaps not well matched for the current evolution of the company. And as companies grow, they change, they evolve. And you can be excellent in your role, and then months later, not be good at your role, not because you changed, but because you didn't change, and because the company changed. So that's some of the challenges, I think, you know, especially when it comes to kind of personnel issues, people who've done a great job, are very talented, but, you know, they're no longer kind of a good fit for their role. And I think that's a challenge for me personally, because it is very personal.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So you're talking about the personal challenge of actually hiring personnel, getting close to them, and being on the battlefield with them, but then realizing what's best for the business is actually going a different direction than that position with a different person.
That's right. And so that's obviously a very tough situation to be in, but it's also very important to recognize, because as a company grows, small problems become much bigger problems. And oftentimes, if you notice the problem, and if a lot of people notice the problem, then it probably means it's too late.
Gotcha.
So you have to be very proactive in terms of managing and shepherding the team.
We can all kind of relate to this personnel problem. I feel like I can sit in your shoes, and think about how it would affect me. But how did it actually affect you? Is this something that does tear at you? Did this bother you? Like, what was kind of the feeling that you got when you had to go through a situation like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough that's a tough situation to be in, and because at one hand, you know, we're all human beings, and you can be empathetic. But at the same time, you know, there is the there's the needs of the company, which have to take precedent to so the company can grow and continue to flourish.
Gotcha. So do you start thinking about, when you're making those decisions, what's best for the company, and that the company comprises of all these other individuals that you can't let down?
That's part of it. Yeah, for sure.
Gotcha. What, anything else, any other examples of just really hard stuff that you face that you can kind of use as an example that you ever overcome?
Well, yeah, I think, a common challenge is that, you get a lot of no's before you get to your yes, especially in an early stage company that's trying to do something innovative and something different, and especially if you're in a conservative marketplace. And I think one of the challenges is to know when to stick to your guns and know that, you've got the right vision, but at the same time, listen to the customer and listen to the market, and be receptive that you might be a little bit off target or have to retool or refocus or rethink the problem.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. So we've talked about where you are today, where the idea came from, talked about who, how you hired, how you tested the idea, then how you hired, talked about some of the hardest things you faced. What else, what can you tell us about what has changed from, let's say, day one to now after you've raised $6 million in terms of expectations or strategies or what have you?
Well, some of the changes are normal growth related changes. Earlier we talked about, winning that first customer. And then what happens is then as you grow, you begin to win more customers. And not only that, you need to increase the rate in which you bring business into the organization. So it's kind of back to that theme of what once worked in terms of internal processes will stop working, and you have to kind of reinvent yourself. And that's important. There are many, many examples, but I think about how we manage our customers, where initially it was first customer, all hands on deck, everyone kind of touching the customer, learning, prodding, experimenting. And then as you get bigger, there are frankly more customers than employees, or hopefully there are more customers than employees, where you begin to have to introduce some processes to support that growth. So kind of in your in early days, you're doing improv, and then as you mature, you begin to build protocols and then best practices and so forth. So that's been an important change. It also becomes a cultural change because folks that came in early perhaps like the creativity and not painting, painting within the lines or painting to the numbers or whatever. And then as you get bigger, the only way you can really ensure quality is to, to make sure you have repeatable processes.
That is an interesting overview because it also seems like something you said earlier about maybe changing personnel. There could be individuals that are perfect for even coming up and creating the protocols, but once they hit that protocol wall, they're like, I've kind of owned this and I'm over it. I want to kind of move on to the next type of thing.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's one of the interesting artifacts of starting a company that's, a growth company, which is it's one company, but it's really going to become three or four different companies in its life cycle.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. So that's a cool overview of the process that our viewers need to kind of sink into their brain, which is you start off and you're all hands on deck, like you say, and it's kind of improv. You're kind of making it up as you go, but then you start really figuring out what's working. You're documenting it. You're continually test it because you're evolving as with your company, but you're documenting and then you'll end up coming up with best practices. But then you actually have to review the best practices, make sure you're not getting stuck in one place, but continuing moving forward.
That's right.
That's an interesting example. What let's transition to kind of the last segment of the interview, which is talking about advice you've received, advice you give. First question is, what type of advice or what piece of advice did you take early on or recently, looking back, that you think was a great move? You're happy you took it. You're happy you met that person that gave it to you.
Right. It's interesting about advice. It is, a lot of entrepreneurs forget that it's okay to ask for help. And it's in some ways it's counter to the entrepreneurial philosophy where, you're supposed to wake up in the morning and don't take no for an answer and break down all the walls and figure out all the answers, presumably on your own. But the reality is that there comes up a time where and for certain things you have to know when to ask for help. And, unfortunately, I can't give you a defining moment or a litmus test, but hopefully you know when that situation is where it's time to ask for advice and get help. And I think that's why it's important, maybe to your earlier point, to have a group of people that can provide advice and counsel that you trust, and you trust both in the sense that they have the company's best interests in mind, but you trust enough where you can be vulnerable and say, "Hey, look, I don't know the answer to this one. Can you give me a nudge and tell me what you think?" And I think that having that type of support infrastructure is very important, especially for anyone who's trying to start a business.
Yeah, it seems like it ties well back into or ties back into the section where we were talking about. You went to a trade show and you got some feedback from industry experts or potential clients. It seems like the same thing happens when you create your advisory board or even your board of directors, where you have to have that moment, or even if it's just a friend of yours, you have to have that moment where you're honest with them, like you're saying, you're open, and you realize you don't have the answer, or maybe you don't think you have the best answer, but you also have to encourage the other person to share. You have to actually tell them, "I'm not sure I know if this is the right answer," or, "This is my answer, tear it apart." That kind of open and honest feedback and conversation.
That's right. Yeah.
Is there any, are there any other pieces of feedback or advice that you've received that you kind of would like to share with other entrepreneurs?
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
Another technical difficulty here. I assume you're gonna do some editing. So, do you want to ask that question again, and then
Yeah,
I'll.
we'll just keep going. I was just, what was I asking? Something about, oh, a piece of advice. Have you had any piece of advice given to you that you think is so good and so crucial that you'd like to pass it on to kind of our viewers?
Well, I've gotten a lot of advice over the years, I suppose. Part of it again is to, ask for help when you need it, and to get that candid feedback. The advice I would offer from my personal experience is to get out there, talk to customers, press as much flesh as you can, and really listen to what the customers are trying to tell you. That might sound so straightforward, but I suspect it is not done as frequently as it probably should be. And I've certainly seen many entrepreneurs fall into the trap where, everything looks good from afar. You read the analyst report and you have the high-level view, but you don't really see the rough edges until you get really close to it. And that's part of being a good entrepreneur, knowing the opportunities but also the challenges. So I guess my best piece of advice is get real close to the customer. And that is part of what inspired our company. As I mentioned earlier, at a very high level, it sure seems like most of healthcare is going to go electronic. But when you get real close to these physicians, you realize all the challenges they have to deal with every day, and that illuminated the opportunity that we've pursued, and I think I've done a good job of capturing.
Yeah, that's a good piece of advice. Keeping it simple is good for our viewers because this gives them no excuse. We give one piece right here towards the end of the interview, which is get real close to your customers, find out what they need, implement or iterate off of their feedback. And this is a good piece of advice because, like we say at the Startup Slingshot, we like actionable and essential advice. And this is both of those all in one little tidbit that our viewers can actually go and act on. So, if our viewers out there or anybody checking out this video wants to get in touch with you, maybe they want a job or maybe they want to purchase your service, how can they connect with you?
Well, hit our website. Our contact information is there, www.shareableinc.com. Otherwise, I've got a Twitter account. The company's got a Twitter account. It's a great way to follow us and stay in the loop.
Gotcha. So I
Gotcha.
want to. A little feedback from Skype. I want to encourage all our viewers out there to check out a couple other interviews I did recently, one with Chris Heffley of LeanKit and one with Jake of Rabbit Hole Creative, to see again how two other entrepreneurs got their business off the ground in hopes of demystifying the process for you so you can take what they've shared and put it into work for your own business. Steve, I really appreciate your time and this has been great.
It's been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks.
Yes.